Information about the world of running, inspiration to fuel passion and excellence, and ideas for making connections and finding community. You're listening to A to Z Running. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the A to Z Running Podcast, where we help runners thrive. I'm Andy, and this is Zach. I'm coming to you from St. Louis, and he is still in Rockford, Michigan. So we're excited to come to you from two different places. Speaking of which, I have a little shout out to the running community here in St. Louis coming to you soon. Today, on this week's episode of the A to Z Running Podcast, we're unpacking that conversation we had with Oliver Hoare, who is the Australian record holder, about racing and how to practically apply the great things that Oliver said last week into our planning of a race season. So there's three things to think about. Racing is best as a season and not just one race, although we do have peak races. And training is different when building fitness versus optimizing performance. We'll dive into that too. And opportunity. There's great opportunities to go beyond ourselves to be part of the running community, which I have personal experience with this week. So we'll be talking about all that and more.
And you need to make sure you go to atozrunning.com and click the word follow. And then on your social media places, your podcast places, and YouTube, subscribe so that we know that you actually care about what we're saying. No, but for real, because then you can get the content and you don't have to go looking for it. That's the most inconvenient thing about information these days, is when you have to go find it yourself. So don't put that burden on your shoulders. Subscribe and follow, and then you don't have to worry about it. And of course, the most important thing that we would love from you is interaction, comment, ask questions, and those kinds of things, because it keeps our thoughts interesting. And it brings us a little bit more outside our own heads, which is important because I spend too much time inside my own head as it is. Now, this is a great question from Anne. And this was, I should mention, some kind of thread. Actually, Andy would describe it better because I don't even understand these things. But in social media, there was a conversation and Anne helped spark it about strides. And Andy was posting some things there. So if you're not sure where this came from, go to our Instagram and there's more there. But Anne asked, what is the advantage of running strides in a run as opposed to at the end? So we're talking about in all of our training with athletes, when we do things like striding and, you know, fast sprints as neuromuscular types of work, we always advise doing that during the run as opposed to at the end of the run or at the beginning or something like that. And of course, the reason is twofold, as these things almost often are. One is just you feel better on your run when you're doing those strides during the run. It just helps you feel better in that run itself. So you're taking advantage of that to just have a good run. And especially when you're trying to run easy and be comfortable, this is a great way to help your body. So it's that neuromuscular activation that we talk so much about. And that's beneficial by itself. However, there's also a key advantage to doing these strides during the run instead of afterward. And it has a lot to do with the recovery dynamic. So you could do these after and still have the same advantage. But our hope is that if you're doing strides in the form and fashion we're discussing, that you're doing something like 3 or more minutes between each stride of your easy running. And if you're at the end of a run, then you have to just walk around for 3 or 4 minutes in between each stride. And that's not super efficient and not terribly exciting. And so doing them in the run helps take advantage of that recovery period the way you're supposed to. And of course, then the question becomes, why? Why do we have that recovery period? And this actually was a question specifically Sam from Amsterdam, which is apparently her name and her location, according to her Instagram place. So Sam said, what's the reason for that time between strides? And as you might guess, it has a lot to do with your energy systems. And what you try to do here is you're trying to maximize this recovery period that essentially replenishes the energy system you're using almost fully. And so what it is it's called the alactic, as opposed to anaerobic and aerobic, you have the alactic energy system. And what this does is it essentially uses a very short supply of fuel within your cells, creatine phosphate to be exact, if you want me to get into the science here. I can a little bit, but the key factor is creatine phosphate burns very quickly and it provides a really big oomph of energy. but it's done in about 10 seconds. It's gone. And so you deplete that very fast. And as a consequence, you don't want to do the stride for very long. That's where that like ideal range of about 10 seconds comes from. And then as well, it also replenishes quickly. As long as you have water in your body, among a few other things, creatine phosphate replenishes itself very rapidly. And it does so within about 3 or so minutes to near 100% of its previous supply. The figure is something like 98, 99% of its previous supply. Now, I did not just come up with all of this on my own by researching cells and molecular biology and such. Instead, I read Healthy Intelligent Training by Keith Livingstone, and he is the one who provided all of this clarity. So if you really want to learn and understand these things in greater depth, I highly encourage anyone who's interested in distance running and wants to really grasp the science behind it better, read his book. And then you're likely to start asking questions about whether your training plan is actually doing the things that it should be doing. Because the answer to that is many of them that we are doing in terms of training don't really do what the science says we should be doing for our bodies. And so in some instances, not across the board, of course, but that's a question that deserves asking at all times for everyone in all of our training so that we can better our training experience. But of course, that is not the main focus of our conversation today. So what we want to do here is get on to the world of running before we dive into our main topic.
Well, the world of running is made up of running communities, and we talk a lot about the running community here at A to Z Running because we find it to be such an exciting and important place in our lives personally. And I got to intersect with an amazing running community here in St. Louis, where I'm here for work. I went to a running store, Running Niche, owned by Bob and Jen, and they were so warm and friendly. We found all kinds of connecting points, and they were so passionate about the running community that I wanted to have them share with us a little bit about why they do what they do at Running Niche. So let's hear from Bob and Jen.
Hey all, I'm Jennifer Henderson, and this is my husband Bob Dyer. We own Running Niche in the Grove in St. Louis, Missouri.
And I'm a born and raised Michigander. So we opened our store here in the city of St. Louis about 3 years ago, and probably the most fun and most inspiring part of what we've experienced so far is the building of our running community. It's inspirational every day when folks come in to allow us to help them pursue their interest in walking and running and in their health and fitness journey.
And what I find really important about it is I like seeing people's successes, whether they be small successes or giant successes. I think that everybody kind of comes to us as they are, and we'd like to help them push themselves a little bit further.
Thank you, Bob and Jen, for not only sharing with us, but then also what you do for the running community. You talk about how it's inspiring for you to have people come into your store. And in return, from personal experience, I can say I feel inspired coming out of your store as well. And then also thank you for connecting me to some of your elite runners, Marie and Barisha. Shout out to you for the long run that we were able to share together and the great time that we had, truly the highlight of my trip to St. Louis. So thank you all.
Can you share a long run? Now, there's an interesting question we might want to try to answer on the podcast sometime. Fun times. Glad for that, because otherwise Andy would be running lonely in these strange cities. Now, let's jump into some news from results in track and field. Of course, and in Ethiopia, the national championships happen, so there's always got to be some kind of news when you have these kinds of championships. So on Sunday, April 11th, in Ethiopia, at elevation, specifically in the 5,000 meters, Gudaf Sege won the women's 5K in a time of 14:49. I mentioned at elevation, it was almost 8,000 feet where they're running here. Now,
wow,
that is significant for a number of reasons. One, because they have a kind of like general conversion at elevation like that to what you should be able to run at sea level in that exact same moment. And it suggests that she should be able to break the world record in the 5K. So that's something. She also broke the world record in the indoor 1500 not terribly long ago this winter. So we know that she's fit and fast. However, not only did she run that fast, she beat the current world record holder in the 5K, Letessenbet Gede, by 7 seconds in the final 400 meters. So she's running at elevation and she's kicking like a fiend to win this race over the world record holder in that same event. That means something, folks. That means something quite substantial. So watch for Gudaf Sege from Ethiopia in track and field this summer, because we can expect some electric things as long as she stays healthy. Looking forward to seeing what happens at the Olympics as well. Okay, that's great. But Andy's got some more news for track and field on U.S. soil.
Absolutely. And USATF has been quiet for a while, but now we are getting some action with their series that they're calling Journey to Gold. We're really excited about the event that happened in Miramar. That's in Florida. And Ajay Wilson took the 800 meter, and that's notable because we've had her on the podcast, and of course, she's the American record holder in the 800. And there was some fast sprinting that happened, and everyone's kind of talking about Matthew Centuritz and Robbie Andrew, who are still the big dogs, but they have yet to post their big times. But of course, there's some time. There's about 2 months before the Olympic trials, and of course, they're looking at how they can do in the Olympic Games too. So who knows? The Olympic trials will be super exciting, and there's a lot of great performances that have happened during the ability to qualify for these events, but we're looking forward to more from USATF and this Journey to Gold that they've started.
And I should mention, when thinking about people like Centro and Andrews, so the reason everyone's talking about this is because the two of them were basically the kings of the 1500 for 3 years. One of the two of them was at the World Championships, at the Olympics, and specifically, neither of them is running well currently. And Robbie Andrews actually had Lyme disease for a bit there, and really kind of knocked out his running for over a year. And as a consequence, he hasn't really been the same. So everyone's still talking about, they're both running, they're both trying to get back into running fast times. And it's just fascinating to see, is there, you know, some long-term ramifications here, or will they be able to get back to that spot? It's always a curious thing to watch. So moving on then to another meet in Florida on Saturday, the 10th of April, and this would have been a high school meet. It was the Bolus Last Chance meet, and we had some high schoolers running fast times, specifically in the 3,200 meters for the boys. Reinhardt Harrison ran 8:47 for a new Florida state record. Not on the USA all-time list for that event, but certainly for the Florida state record. And 8:47 is not slow for 3,200 meters. That's, you know, that's essentially 2:420 something miles, which, you know, for high school boys is moving.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of running fast, on Friday, April 9th, Let's Run reported, and this actually, the information was released on April 8th, that the NN Mission Marathon has indeed been scheduled. And why that's significant is because the NN running team is like that super fast elites from all over the world. They're basically trying to be like the best marathoners on the planet, and they do other events too, but certainly marathoning is their kind of their king thing. Eliud Kipchoge runs for them, among others. Kenenisa Bekele. You know, why don't I just make a mention of a few list things? You know, Kenenisa Bekele, who held a number of world records until Joshua Cheptegei broke them. But oh, by the way, Joshua Cheptegei is part of NN running team, as well as Jeffrey Kamwarar, who also held like half marathon world record, and many others who are like world marathon majors champions, sometime world record holders, all that kind of stuff. So this team is super fast, and they are putting on this event specifically because, and this is what's so interesting about it, many of their athletes are not ranked well in the world. And it is purely the consequence of not racing often enough this year, which, of course, most
not surprising.
Yes, not surprising. And this is really what it boils down to, is you have people like Eliud Kipchoge, who did run that London Marathon elites only race in the fall, but had a bad race. And as a result, he's fighting an uphill battle to just get in the rankings at all. And you can't just be in the rankings. If you're Kenyan, which he is, you have to basically be ranked in the top five in the world in the marathon to go to the Olympics. So Eliud Kipchoge is facing a scenario where if he doesn't put together a good race at this event, he's probably not going to the Olympics this summer, which is incredible to think, because, you know, he's the world record holder in the marathon. And aside from that London elite marathon, he hadn't lost a marathon race in like 12 years. So anyway, that's significant. We're going to watch for that. It's coming up here, and we'll report to you once the event happens. We'll tell you all the details about it. And that's the NN Mission Marathon coming soon.
So we love to talk about all age group wins and all age group records because we love the idea that people continue in this sport and do amazing things, including world records and really fast times. In Dorney, England, Yoko Gordon ran 3:29 in the marathon at 70 years of age. I mean, that is incredible. Yeah. She ran in the inaugural Women's Olympic Marathon in 1984. This is a long career, people. This is amazing that she's continued to work hard to be really good at this sport. It's a new British World 70 record and possibly the new World Women's 70 record. It's unclear because there's some other performances that haven't been ratified. So we'll see. Regardless, it is super fast.
And speaking of really fast, that is all we have to report at the moment for the world of running, but certainly more to come. As mentioned, we've got a lot of exciting things coming up soon, and we'll let you know about all of that. For now, let's move on to our main topic. All right, as Andy mentioned, we want to be talking about how to execute racing season properly. And so in talking with Ollie last week, we got a really clear glimpse into what a professional's experience is in these things, and it's really fascinating to me. But if you, like us, are not a professional runner, then in most instances, you are the one who's deciding all of these things. The schedule, the racing tour, is not deciding for you when you're racing and how often you're racing. So then the question becomes, do you race often, or do you race, you know, so like the marathon, for example, if you've got a Chicago marathon on the schedule, is that your only race, or is there more to it than that? So the three things we want you to be thinking about here as we discuss the topic: racing should be a season, not a one-off, and there is definitely a way to go about that. Training is different when building fitness versus optimizing performance, and we want to isolate for you why and how that is different. And then, of course, racing as a season provides more opportunity to get outside ourselves, and there's a lot of value to that, as we will discuss. So, Andy, start us off talking about racing season versus the one-off experience.
Absolutely. So the first part I want to discuss is identifying weaknesses. Having a racing season can help us do that. Oliver Hoare said in our previous podcast, a bad race is better than a good training session. And the reason why that is, I mean, there's a value to workouts and some that can't be replaced by a race, but the idea that we can learn a lot about ourselves, we can learn a lot about what we need to do differently from an actual race experience. So some great questions to ask yourself after a race to evaluate would be, what did I do well in this race? Start with that. What things went well? What am I really proud of about this experience? And then ask your question, did I execute the plan? Be honest with yourself. I mean, don't modify after the fact and be like, well, it worked out this way, so it worked towards this part of my plan. No, this is the time to be honest. Did I execute the plan I had for myself? Did I follow it? Where is there room for growth? For Ollie, that could be the couple seconds. That could be tucking in behind someone instead of swinging wide. For us in the marathon, it's going to look a little bit differently. Well, there are many races represented listening to this podcast, but whatever position that you're in, is there room for growth? Can I gain minutes, seconds, just from race decisions? And then ask yourself, what will help me to improve in future races? And if you can, this would be a great exercise to either do out loud with your coach or maybe write it down. There are a lot of values to actually articulating it and making yourself go through this process.
Speaking of which, after that 5K that Andy and I ran back in February, my coach, Barry McGee, had basically said that exact reaction. You know, it's too bad that this is your only race right now, because there's a lot you did wrong there. And I did. I made some mistakes. And I made some mistakes that he told me ahead of time not to make. And I still did. But of course, it was my first race in over a year. And so thinking about that, like, of course, I'm not going to have the best race of my life. I mean, I guess it's possible, but it's very unlikely. And so we tend to do this, right? We put so much pressure on that one race, and in reality, we get to that one day, and we just don't know, truly don't know if we're actually ready for that race because we haven't tried. And so that I love that mm-hmm. sense of identifying the weaknesses, because that's where you're going to find out, oh, in fact, you know, I shouldn't have tried those gels. As it turns out, they were feeling okay in training, but then when I got into the race and I was really pushing myself, didn't feel as good as I thought they would. So how do you know that except for to try them in a race situation?
Yeah. And for me, I think that often I am hesitant to be as gutsy because that is my first inclination. So then I think, oh, I got to be more reserved. And my big flaw in that 5K down in Austin was that I allowed there to be separation because I was scared to surge. And
despite the fact that her coach was yelling at her saying, don't let there be separation, stay in contact.
It was super windy. And I was just nervous too, because I didn't have enough confidence that I should catch that next group. And it was a split second decision, and I should have hung on and gained the benefit of being with a group and having the wind blocked for me. So that was something that if I had an extended season, I'd take further into, but you know, even coming into some hopeful racing this summer, I'm going to think more about that and the benefits of sticking with people. Absolutely.
And similar to then trying to find the weaknesses, find the gaps and try to fill them, the racing season provides the opportunity to practice some of those things, as we were kind of mentioning, like with gels in a marathon type of situation. And there's a lot of things that we should be practicing as we're building toward kind of a focus or peak race goal. Certainly the longer the distance, the more things you need to practice, which makes sense. Now, I'm not necessarily condoning that marathoners run several marathons in lead up to their focus marathon, although there is a school of thought, and there's a lot to talk about there, but trying to do some long distance races to get close to that kind of marathon experience. But why? Because we want to be able to practice some of the things that we need to be prepared for. And some of it's just like practicing being nervous and running when I'm nervous, you know? So if you are the kind of person who, you know, higher stress, higher anxiety, or just in general, you know, don't race very often, those race day nerves matter. They influence our digestion. They influence our energy expenditure. They influence our in-race decisions. So we do want to practice what it feels like to be in the midst of that anxiety so that, you know, over time by practicing it, it hopefully reduces. And then the other details that surround all of this, you know, what are you going to eat before the race? What are you going to eat, if anything, during the race? Even what are you going to eat after the race? You know, that matters too, because you don't want to, you know, make yourself sick and be like, oh man, if only I would have known that eating that steak was not, well, maybe you already know that. But, and then of course the drills, the pre-race stuff, what are you going to do, if anything, for like a warm-up type of thing? And for marathoners especially, really having a clear sense of what is enough but not too much to have my body feel ready to run. You don't have to run super hard out the gate in a marathon. You know, you don't have to even run goal pace right away in a marathon. You can ease into it. But I need to know those things. And then the, you know, the specifics of what I'm wearing, which shoes are you going to choose? Have you worn those super Nike shoes, those Nike super shoes for a marathon yet? Because if you haven't, I wouldn't try it for your peak goal race. I would try it for something else first. You know, and if you're wearing any kind of clothing that's uncommon or that's not the thing you normally wear, you definitely want to try that as many times as it takes to feel comfortable that what you have is exactly what you need.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us do remember to do some of that during our workouts and whatnot, but it's the combination, because it's like, okay, I like these shoes. These are my race shoes. Maybe I'll do it for a workout. But have you worn it with the pair of socks that you plan to wear? Cause it could rub differently. Same with like your race shorts and your race singlet. If you're going to wear a belt, is it going to rub at the wrong spot? Are there going to be seams with pressure against them that normally you aren't dealing with? So it's kind of putting all the pieces together. It's like training, you know, like putting all the practical pieces together, putting all the training pieces together. A race helps you do that. So yeah, those are very great practical tips. Thank you, Zach. So another thing that a racing season helps us with is experiencing different race scenarios. And we can have all kinds. We don't control the weather. Maybe if you live somewhere amazing, like, you know, California, you know, it might be around 70 degrees during the midday or 50s in the morning or whatever. But in Michigan, we really don't have a really set know it all of how the weather is going to be. So it's great to have experience racing in different kinds of weather. So in the rain, it's great to have experience running in the rain because you're going to need different gear. You know, again, we talk about like equipment. Oh, my shoes rub me differently when I'm running in the rain, and I might need to bring a pair of ankle high socks. You know, there's all kinds of these practical things, but also it's the mental aspect, because when we approach a race, and you know, there's more hills than we're used to during a race. Even if we train on hills, running your hardest on hills could be different. And then hairpin turns and following directions and all these things that are different from race to race can help you compile your experiences to help you run better in any situation. So yeah, gaining experience is all about that experience and what we can learn from it.
Yeah. And those, you know, those experiences, I just think about how many times, like I know, because in training, you know, we try to train yourselves to feel physically be able to do the things you're going to do in a race, but you just don't necessarily know exactly how it's going to feel. And you can tell yourself, I'll remember from the last time I ran that race. But when that was 18 months ago, in some instances right now, or even 5 or 6 months ago, I don't really want to trust to that. You know, I want to make sure that I'm really well prepared for what I'm going to feel like if the weather's not great and how I'm going to respond to that, how I take a hill, you know, late in a race and all of those things. It's good. It's good to have, when you show up at the focus race, the target race, to have a season behind you where you've weathered the storms already, where you've experienced the dynamics already. And of course, this is a luxury right now because it's very difficult to find enough races to be able to even call it a racing season. But even, you know, even the small things that, you know, it's just this like podunk race that someone put together for a weekend of fun. You know, jump in that kind of stuff. Anything that creates that race type experience, and I can string these together over time, can help me combine all of these factors as we're talking about. Which then brings us to the second layer here, thing number two for you to be thinking about right now, which is how you're training during a kind of performance period. And this is a significant difference from how you might train in other periods in general. And the best way to think about it is you're really training for two or three things, depending on where you are in your training cycle. The most important thing you're doing with training is to build fitness. And so in most areas of your training cycle, you're building fitness. Even late in the season, you're still trying to, you know, put some icing on the cake, as they often say. But in essence, when you get near to race experience, there's not much more, if you've done it right, there's not much more you should and could be doing to build substantial amounts of fitness anymore. We're talking about the last several, even up to like 8 or 10 weeks of training, depending on how long your cycle's been. And during those periods, that's when your condition should be very high. Your aerobic training should be just maxed out by that time if you're really doing it right. And what then you do to really take advantage of your time at that point is the optimizing performance types of stuff. That's things like coordination, as opposed to like building fitness, you're coordinating fitness. So you've done all of this really good base work. You've done some other kinds of factors, even potentially some anaerobic stuff, depending on what kind of race distance you're running. But now how do you put these pieces together? And there's some areas in training that help you do that. And I'll get into a specific in a moment. But the other thing here is you're also really looking for how can you fill gaps. You know, so I don't really know truly where I'm missing something in my training until I actually try to run hard in a race type experience. And you can simulate that on your own, but we are all honest with ourselves when we say it's really not the same. I can't get myself into the same headspace most of the time by myself unless I have that type of race simulated experience with others and such. And then the other thing there is the final elements that you might be needing but really don't want to address until you're near the end of the cycle. So what are these things? Let me just really quickly mention. Coordinating fitness is one of the most complicated and confusing aspects of training for runners. And in most instances, it's the least important as well. And so I say that now to suggest if this doesn't make sense, don't worry about it, because it's not the thing that's going to make the huge difference for you. But it is something that helps to really make race day the best possible day. And what I mean then by coordinating fitness is you're doing a lot of things like long mileage, long runs and long tempos and that kind of stuff. You might be doing some things like neuromuscular work. If you're really doing it right, you're doing neuromuscular work year round. Fartleks, strides, however that may be. We talked about strides earlier in the episode here. That's where that element happens. You may also be doing things like anaerobic work, where you're doing intervals and repeats and such. And this is all very good. Maybe you got some hills in there. The one thing that you're missing with all of those pieces is putting them all together in a single effort, which you do not want to do often in training to build fitness, because it's the least efficient way to grow fitness. And that's the important thing here. If you're doing a lot of like race simulated efforts in training throughout the year, you're less efficient in how you're building your fitness. But there is a point in time when you want that, because you need to be able to put those pieces together for your main goal race. And if you wait until that moment to try to put them all together, you're doing yourself a disservice. So for marathoners, maybe you can't quite, you know, put, like, we always talk about it as, can you run the distance and can you run the pace? And then the final question, can you run the pace for the distance? Which for a marathoner, you almost never answer that question until race day. But you should at least be able to get close to answering it by doing things like half marathon time trials, 25K time trials. And I'm saying time trials in meaning you run a race, but you're not draining the well in those races. And that's that other piece of how you coordinate the fitness without destroying your fitness. Because if you go all out every time you run a race during an entire racing season, you're ruining your body. Fundamentally, you're delaying your fitness growth, and potentially you're actually backtracking in some instances. So you don't want to go all out, but you do want that opportunity to combine those elements. And then, you know, to fill the gaps is that thing we were talking about where you're identifying the weaknesses. You're finding out, oh, it looks like I feel really badly once I've been running hard for 5 or 6 miles. You know, it's just really hitting me hard. So I need to do some things to work on that sustaining the effort kind of thing. Final elements in training in general often include things like, you know, I've been doing all this great fitness building, but I haven't actually run my 5K pace in kind of like a 5K simulated workout. I'm not talking about a race. I'm talking about, like, can you do 400 repeats at 5K pace comfortably? Because you should. If you're running 400 repeats with rest, that should feel relatively easy at 5K pace. And for most of us, it doesn't at first. So we do a few workouts to get it to feel relatively easy before the races, things like that. All those things matter. There's a lot that we can do to put those pieces together and combine them. But in essence, that is the difference in mindset in training. When you're talking about, I want to optimize performance, I'm not really able to build fitness substantially anymore, but I can definitely get my body better ready to run a good race hard, a hard race good. And that's kind of the key factor. And I should mention, for marathoners, one of the most important things that you do want to address if you can during this stage is running economy types of things. Because in marathoning, you generally aren't spending a substantial amount of time focused on developing running mechanics. You're doing a lot of volume, you're doing a lot of that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of different kinds of things that can help influence running economy, not just strides. That's one option, but there's a lot more to it. And that tends to make a very big difference in whether or not we can still sustain the effort at mile 20, 22, you know, where the wall starts to hit. The wall is two things at all times. It's always two things in one combination or another. One of them is an energy thing. And so a lot of us, you know, we feel like we hit the wall because our energy supplies have depleted and our body is no longer able to use any readily available energy. So that's one aspect. But the wall also tends to hit because our muscle mechanics are no longer operating at the comfortable state that we've trained them to operate at. And we don't have a way to bring them back to that state or to use the state that they're in and still be able to run economically. And so the more economical we can run earlier in the run, the less likely that happens later in the run. So that there's some things there, a lot more to talk about with all of that, but that's not really the intent of the time here. So we should go into that in more detail sometime soon. But I did want to mention one other thing. And this actually was Andy's point, so she's going to emphasize it better here in a moment, but we talk so much in training about the fact that, like, when it's the first 2 weeks of my training cycle, that's 30 weeks long, I should not expect myself to be able to run as if I'm in goal race shape by the end of those 30 weeks. So the early weeks shouldn't be as fit as the later weeks, or something's wrong, or I just should change my goals, because it can happen, and then I change my goals. But the essence here is the same for racing. When I start doing races, even if it's like I'm training for a marathon, but I'm jumping in a 5K, I should not expect the first race that I run to be as capable as my goal at the end of the cycle. I should temper those expectations. And it has a lot to do with the fact that you're really never trying to go just drain the well, see what my body can do, all out types of efforts. Instead, what you're trying to do is, what's my body able to put out right now at a reasonable effort? That is, we always talk about it as, you should run an even effort when you feel like at the end you have a little bit more that you could have given, but you don't. And that's the right way to run races most of the year, where you don't end the race on your hands and knees and someone's carrying you off in a stretcher, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are a lot of great points. We have a blog post that some of these points that Zach just made, we put in, and that is pulling off a successful race season. And I will be linking to that at azrunning.com in this episode. And as Zach said, I'm going to kind of expound on what he just said about the goals that we have in these races. We recently said that we don't want to train for the future. We want to train where we're at right now. So it's very important to race where we are right now, not where we want to be, if that makes sense. Because we have a peak, we have a progression, we have phases in training. So it's very important to consider that we might have a goal of being here, but at this very moment, I'm here. And I, for those of you listening, I just had one finger in front of the other. You know that you're getting the gist of what I'm saying. Essentially, that you don't want to go and try to run your goal pace as long as you can, and then see if you die. And if you don't, then you're happier. Like, that's not a great way to do this, because it's not going to help you nearly as much. So we chip away at our goals one step at a time. As distance runners, we get that. We know that we can't see the marathon finish line when we start. So we have to take that same distance running mindset to everything that we do.
So our final point then is those three things. Remember, the three things to think about is, what does it mean then to have just the experience of just getting outside ourselves and that race kind of experience? And so there's value to that. There's substantial value to that, especially when we're, you know, doing so much of our training alone. Andy, break that down for us then.
Yeah. So racing is really exciting, and being able to give ourselves some sort of reason to elevate and to bring ourselves to the next level is really an amazing opportunity for us to test the waters. And it makes those really hard efforts more rewarding, more interesting. Even if you don't have a collection of medals, even if they go in a box, it's still a rewarding experience to cross the finish line. It's very gratifying. It's one of the best feelings most runners can articulate that they have in the sport, crossing that finish line. And it's a way to stay connected to the running community, just running beside someone, just running in this group, just meeting people like the people that I met from Running Niche. Meeting people, being part of this great running community, is a great reason to choose racing. And then the easiest way to hold yourself accountable, because sometimes we need a goal. We need something on the schedule to help us motivate to do something, to get into training, to stretch ourselves, to challenge ourselves. And it's a vulnerable thing. And this gives us a great growth point as humans to place ourselves in uncomfortable situations. You probably heard it said that challenges bring on growth, that if you're uncomfortable, that's when you're going to grow the most. If we're always staying comfortable and doing what we know, we're probably not going to change much of what we're doing, but it gives us a hunger to keep pursuing the sport because we care more about the outcome.
It absolutely does. And that's, you know, that's an interesting tension that I've heard so many runners articulate. And I appreciate Andy expressing that point, because I've talked with a number of runners who will say, I'm not going to run that race. I was planning on it, but I'm not going to do it because I just don't feel like I'm ready. And, you know, I don't really want to. And of course, what they're not saying at that moment is, I don't want to look badly in front of the people that are watching me. You know, Strava, for example. I hate this about Strava. I think it influences us far more than we realize, which is, I do things so that it looks a certain way to my Strava people. So I'm sitting there thinking about this race, and do I want Strava to be reporting a race that wasn't really what I thought I should be able to do in that moment? And that should never be a deciding factor for whether or not we do something. That's just not the reason that we're doing this stuff called running. But I do think, and this, I always go back to this study, and there's been a couple examples of this, but the one in particular that that fueled a lot of these conversations, which was, you know, the why do you do races question. And they specifically, you know, identified that the number one reason, it was like 79% of respondents said in the study that they do it for the kind of shared experience dynamic. And that's not to say that they did it to interact with the other people, because that was actually a substantially lower response of wanting the social dynamic, but it's the shared experience aspect. And we can't undersell the value of that shared experience, where it's not a social commitment. It's not me running with my running group and my friends. Instead, I can essentially go and live in anonymity in a sense, but not be anonymous, because I am one of the many and I am a part of the many and doing this thing that we all do together. And there's some really crazy value in our general wellness and being able to feel like we belong to a thing, but at the same time not have to have necessarily the burdens and pressures that sometimes come with social aspects too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's something there as to why people love that so much. And I think we can't underestimate the value of such things. So yes, to get outside ourselves, to have the experience, so many reasons why that's a good thing and makes our final effort in our big goal in racing just that much better, because we've been able to sustain that over that time.
So I apologize to those of you who have heard Zach break up that study.
I'm going to interrupt you really quickly, Andy. I got boys. What's up, dude? Is the show done? Too much show? Okay. Well, mommy and daddy are just about done. Do you want to just sit right here and wait for a minute? Here, sit on the couch right there and wait for a minute. Don't criticize me for bringing up that study, Andy. It's so good.
I have a reason for it though.
Go ahead. I'm gonna clap at you. Okay. Ready?
So at this point, you've probably heard Zach mention that study, like, I don't know, 8 times on the A to Z Running Podcast. And it's for good reason.
Times.
800 times. It's because we geek out about the idea that the community makes us better, that we grow and we thrive being connected to each other, even if it's just running next to each other, doing the same foot by foot step motion. And it's why we do this thing at A to Z Running. We want to be part and foster running community. So thank you to all of you who listen, because this is exactly what this is. It's a great running community. So we're grateful that you've joined us. Seriously.
Absolutely. So in summary, let me remind you briefly what we just talked about. Make it a racing season to have the best possible big day. So that season aspect influences the value of our big goal substantially. Then, of course, train to optimize performance. Especially when you're thinking about that period of time as you're nearing your goal race. Take advantage, finally, then, of the opportunity to get outside yourself. And in all of these things, enjoy the chance to race more often, as so many of us want to, and understand that it can actually be a very positive contribution to our big goal and our overall experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's awesome. So next week, you're going to want to stay tuned. So if you haven't subscribed yet, please do. We have a lot of amazing guests coming your way in the coming weeks and content that we've already started curating for you. Clayton Young, you might know his name because he was the recent 15K US Road Champion. And that's also significant because it's super, super competitive. It's been the only US Road Championship that actually happened in recent days. And he's talking to us about running through transitions. Life transitions, they hit us, and what can we do to help them be as smooth as possible? And then please join the conversation. We say it all the time, but we seriously do love to hear from you. And we're grateful for the questions that we get on this show that we can unpack, like we did talking about strides. You make this conversation continue. At A to Z Running, we want to hear what you have to say. We want to hear about your successes too. So please join us. You can follow us at A to Z Running on most platforms.